Good morning. It is time to get up with the sweetest words in the language of baseball. Play ball. There's an offer on the table to start the season. We've got the details right off the top. Then, Aaron Rodgers has one job. So why does his team seem intent on asking him to do another? This is going to get very interesting. And then, with all the Dak discussion in Dallas, we'll tell you exactly how much any team can afford to pay a quarterback if it wants to win it all. It's time to get up, starting right now. On a Tuesday from Bristol, Mike Greenberg here. Delighted that you have chosen to be there on what is a very busy day, because in just a moment, we'll be bringing you the very latest on the opportunity for one of our major sports to be back much sooner than we might once have expected. Well, let's start with Get Up and Go and take you through some of the big notes around the world of sports. It starts with Tua Tagovailoa. He has agreed to terms with the Dolphins on a 4-year, $30-plus million rookie deal. Almost $20 million of it comes in a signing bonus. The deal also contains a 5th-year team option. To the NBA, where the league and the Players Association have reached an agreement to push back the deadline to terminate the collective bargaining agreement until September. The original 60-day window was closing this week. They have a lot of decisions to make. Overseas, the UK government has cleared the Premier League to resume play without fans starting June 1st. The league's 20 clubs are now expected to vote on whether to resume the season in the next few days. And that brings us to our top story. Major League Baseball's owners have approved a proposal for a return-to-play scenario that would have teams starting the 2020 season in their home stadiums without fans beginning in early July. Commissioner Rob Manfred is expected to present the proposal to the players later today. And here are some of the key points in it. It would be an 82-game schedule, an expanded playoffs of 14 teams, a universal DH. Schedules would be just division opponents and interleague teams located close by. They'd be played in stadiums that have local and state government approval. And the big one, regarding money, all revenue would be split 50-50 between owners and players. That is where this is going to get complicated. Tony Clark is the executive director of the Players Association. He told The Athletic, quote, "A system that restricts player pay based on revenues is a salary cap, period. This is not the first salary cap proposal our union has received. It probably won't be the last. The league is trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they have failed to achieve in the past, and to anonymously negotiate through the media for the last several days suggests they know exactly how this will be received. None of this is beneficial to the process of finding a way for us to safely get back on the field and resume the 2020 season, which continues to be our sole focus." We have coverage of this here from our insider Jeff Passan and our buddy Mark Teixeira, who, of course, played a long career in the major leagues. Great to have you both. And, Jeff, I will start with you, because that was extremely troubling to read what Tony said. What are you hearing about how the money is going to play into this?
Greeny, this week is not going to be fun. And this is a consequence of an agreement in March that the union believes one thing and Major League Baseball believes another. Ultimately, it is going to come down to money, but I want to go to the end of this, because I think that's the important part. I want to go to what happens if money takes this whole thing off the rails and we do not have a baseball season. What you have is players who are not getting paid, players who are getting a year older, players who have free agency. That's a disaster. You have owners who haven't made a cent of revenue this year. You have owners whose franchise values could go down. You have owners who might end up in bankruptcy having to sell their teams. Because of that, Greeny, because of those terrible outcomes, if there is no baseball, I have a really difficult time believing that these two parties can't get together and figure out how to split a few billion dollars. Because isn't that what this comes down to? That we're in the middle of a global pandemic right now, and if millionaires and billionaires can't get together and figure out how to be just a little less rich, there's a really big problem with this sport that's going to chase it around for years and years to come.
I can put specific numbers to that. Baseball last year made $10.7 billion in revenue. The average player got paid $4.4 million. Mark Teixeira, obviously, if you were a player and you heard those words from the head of the Players Association, what would your reaction have been?
Well, first of all, I would thank Tony Clark because, you know, he's our union leader. That's what we pay him to do. He's supposed to stand up for us and our salaries. That being said, this is unprecedented in the history of the Major League Baseball Players Association. And every other year, I would stand together and say the owners aren't going to do this to us and we're going to get paid our full fare. If I'm going to put myself out there, I'm going to get paid a full day's wage. The problem is that you have people all over the world taking pay cuts, losing their jobs, losing their lives, frontline workers putting their lives at risk. These are unprecedented times, and this is the one time that I would advocate for the players accepting a deal like this. A 50-50 split of revenues is not that crazy. If you really think about it and boil it down to what the players usually get from a revenue standpoint, it's actually lower than 50% of the baseball revenue for a full season. So if I'm a player, I don't like it, but I'm going to go do whatever I have to do to play, and that means taking this deal.
I guess I want to ask you both. Jeff, I'll start with you. Is there an understanding, as best as you can tell, of the extraordinary tone deafness of turning this circumstance into a fight over money? And it's the fact that they are millionaires and billionaires only makes it worse. But in a world where we have unemployment in this country that is reaching depression-era levels, is there any understanding you have grasped from anyone of just how tone deaf that sounds?
Greeny, can I just address Tex before I answer that question? Because I'm fascinated to hear any player say that. Tex, you came up, I think Don Fear was the union leader when you were a rookie, right?
Yep.
And yes, and I think Michael Wiener was around when Mike took over as well.
Yes, yes. I was with Don and Michael. And here's the thing, Jeff. Like I said, in any other year, this would be a fight and players would be right to fight. I think the Players Association has done a great job of sticking together. Owners are making money. Players are making money. This has never happened in any of our lifetimes. Since the Spanish flu, over 100 years ago, players need to understand that if they turn this deal down and shut the sport down, the amount they're not making a cent. Okay, so I'd rather make pennies on the dollar and give hope to people and play baseball than not make anything and lose an entire year of my career.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, and listen, that's not an entirely unreasonable position. I think you can do that, though, without accepting the 50-50 split. It's, you know, listen, it's not a salary cap like Tony Clark said, but it is the salary cap's cousin, and it is part of salary cap systems. When you talk about revenue splits, you're talking about the NFL, you're talking about the NBA, you're talking about the NHL. Those are all cap systems. And Major League Baseball, remember, 26 years ago now, the union lost a World Series along with MLB fighting to avoid a salary cap system. You are correct that this is a pandemic. This is unlike anything we have ever seen before. But when a negotiation starts, Tex, you are going to start on one extreme and your opponent is going to start on the other extreme, and you come toward the middle. It feels like if you're the union right now, you're going to start on the other end where you're saying, we're not going to take a cut at all. We're going to get our full prorated salary like we thought we negotiated in that March agreement. And if you want us to come off of that, you're going to have to come toward us first.
Can I jump in here for just a moment here, Jeff? Because I'd like to go back to the question I asked you a moment ago, which is to say that choosing the middle of a pandemic to start making these kinds of negotiating tactics strikes me as the opportunity to blow all of the goodwill you have built up with all of the labor peace that you have had in this sport for a very long time. And all three of us are old enough to remember a time when baseball was known as the sport where the owners and the players couldn't get it together and they had a World Series canceled and everything else. And I'm telling you right now, if this thing blows up over money, they will lose fans that they will never get back, and they will deserve it.
I completely agree with you, Greeny. And that's why I'd like to warn people not to pay too much attention to what's going on this week. We're really early in this process. And if you look at the calendar, we have about 2.5 weeks until the parties need to reach an agreement in order for there to be spring training in June 10th or so, and in order for the season to start maybe on the 4th of July. They've got some time. And in the negotiation like this, you are going to have them, you know, I have a column going up on ESPN.com soon, and I talk about this almost being like burning off the morning fog. You got to get all the anger out. You got to get all the bluster out. You got to get the extreme positions out. You got to fight early on. And then when it comes down to it, when you got brass tacks time, that's when you get together and realize that if you screw this thing up, it is going to haunt your sport for a long, long time. You're going to be the sport that in the middle of the pandemic ended up losing it and not giving the American people what they want or deserve because you couldn't figure out how to split up billions of dollars.
Yeah, I think that's a real concern here. Guys, I'm going to leave this for the moment. I'm going to bring you both back a little bit later this morning. Thank you both very much for doing this. But I want to get a take on this from Dominique Foxworth, who'll be with us this all morning long. And I want to make sure everyone is aware that, Nick, you were the president of the NFL Players Association. And at a separate time, you were the chief operating officer of the NBA Players Association. So you have been, to use a phrase, in the room where this stuff happens. What are your thoughts on all of this? How would you try to represent the best interest of your players while understanding the potential for the optics to be really dicey?
I think the optics aren't great, but I do think that it is absolutely a cap on player salaries, maybe not an individual team salary. But it seemed to me that people should be angry about this, but make sure you point that anger in the right direction. It's not at the players. The baseball players have never had a salary cap. It seems awfully opportunistic for the owners to try to impose a salary cap right now and attempt to make this a public fight so everyone can look at the players and say, why don't you just take whatever deal is on the table? How about you leave the system the same? Complicating things by adding new wrinkles and trying to take back some more money, to me, seems bad. Like, the players, I understand they will make less money. So the owners need to accept that they're going to make less money also and stop trying to take out of the players' pockets. And this may be something that could be worth considering if they promise to repeal it after this season. It just feels like an opportunistic thing, and they're attempting to turn the media and the fans against the players, which is an old, tired tactic that leagues use against players time and time again. So this is problematic to me, not because Tony Clark said no to it, but because the owners thought this was an appropriate time to try to impose a salary cap.
Look, I'm not necessarily blaming one side versus the other. Here's what I am saying. We have all sat here for 2 months dreaming about the day that we would figure out a way to get sports back. And I never would have thought, maybe this is being naive on my part, that the first conversation we'd have when one of the major sports was on the verge of figuring out a way to return would be how they were going to split up the money. And again, maybe that is naivete on my part, but it seems to me they don't need advice from me, but I'm going to give it to them anyway, Neek. I believe that Rob Manfred and Tony Clark should lock themselves in a room and not come out until they figure this out and agree to not say a word to any reporter in the interim, because the more this conversation goes on, they will deserve to lose all the fans that they do.
I hate it, and I love the idea that you propose, but I think it's definitely naive to think that this is not about the money. The reason why we talk about this every day and the reason why we talk about college sports maybe coming back and Major League Baseball coming back, it's not about providing hope to the country. It's about getting some money and entertaining the people who are watching. So I'm not surprised that it came down to money, but I'm disappointed that people are looking and blaming the players when it's obvious that the owners are trying to change a system that's been in place for centuries, frankly.
All right, we'll leave this here for the moment. We'll come back and do much more on this as the morning continues. There's a lot of other news out there that we will get to, and Neek will be talking about football coming up. It is Aaron Rodgers' job to win football games, not to be a mentor. That's what another Packer legend says. What should Rodgers be thinking? We'll answer that question coming up next. And then, quarterbacks are the most important players in the NFL, but should they break a team's bank? We'll show you why history says the answer is absolutely not as we get up with you on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
GetUp is brought to you by the makers of non-drowsy children's Claritin. Live Claritin Clear. To football we go, where the Packers traded up in the draft last month to take Aaron Rodgers' potential successor in Jordan Love. Rodgers, of course, once upon a time replaced Brett Favre in Green Bay. Favre was recently asked on ESPN Wisconsin Radio and said Rodgers should have nothing to fear. Here's what Brett said.
Again, this is 15 years that Aaron has played and played it unbelievably well, and I don't see any signs of him slowing down. There's no reason for him to fear anything. You know, at some point, someone's going to replace you. You know that. Aaron's job is not to mentor Jordan Love. Aaron's job is to win football games for the Green Bay Packers. That's what he's paid to do, and that's what he's going to do.
That part of it I find so interesting. His job is not to mentor the young player. His job is to win games. And the Dans have joined us here this morning along the way. Dan Graziano and Dan Orlovsky, I want to start with you as a quarterback. What does the idea of mentoring a young quarterback? I know when the Jets drafted Sam Darnold, they had Josh McCown on the team, who basically was a highly paid assistant coach. He was purely there to mentor the young quarterback. But yeah, in a circumstance like this, what does mentoring the young quarterback actually mean?
Well, I mean, it's teaching him all the details about being a pro, both on the field and off the field. And it's important for everyone at home to realize technology has totally changed the NFL game when it comes to mentorship. Back in the day when I was playing, you know, we didn't have iPads. So we would get in the building at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and we'd be crunching tape for a great majority of the morning. And then we'd get done with our day practice and workout wise. And then we would be there till 7 or 8 o'clock at night, continuing to watch tape. And so all those younger players could come into the meeting rooms and watch all of us do that. I did that as a younger player, and I certainly did it as an older player. Well, nowadays, that's not the case that much anymore. Guys have their own personal iPads with all the film loaded onto that iPad, so they get into the building a little bit later, and they certainly don't stay as late. They get done with their day, and most of them go home and watch their film kind of on their own. And so all that time that you miss mentoring kind of through osmosis is gone. So that's going to be a challenge for Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers' job is not going to be to mentor Jordan Love, but I would disagree with Brett Favre that it's not his job to mentor. He absolutely needs to mentor, but it's mentoring the number two or the number three wide receiver, the number two or the number three tight end or the backup tailback, because those people are going to have direct impact on the Packers winning or losing football games this year, and they're going to have direct impact on Aaron Rodgers and how he plays this year. It's going to be Jordan Love's job to be annoying and to be in Aaron Rodgers' back pocket and to push the envelope to a point where Aaron Rodgers turns around and said, leave me alone. Stop asking me the questions right now. I have to get myself to play and get ready to play as well as possible. So it's on the young player to push the envelope with how much the veteran's willing to share. But Aaron Rodgers does not need to go out of his way to get Jordan Love ready to play in 2023.
Dan Graziano, what are you hearing out of Green Bay as far as what they're expecting? They had to know that the reaction to this was not going to be all, you know, moonlight and roses or whatever the expression is I'm looking for. What is it that you are hearing from out of Green Bay as far as what their expectations were and what their concerns are relative to this relationship?
Yeah, in terms of what they're saying in Green Bay, the people in charge are saying they expect Aaron Rodgers to handle it like a professional. The GM, Brian Gutekunst, was talking to us before the draft, said he and Aaron Rodgers have had conversations about the team's philosophy on drafting quarterbacks, how you can't risk being without one. No matter where you are in your franchise's history, if you find a guy you believe in, you think is going to be a good one, you have to take him. So their hope is that Rodgers can compartmentalize, and Gutekunst has said that Rodgers Rodgers is very focused on what he calls legacy stuff, not just with the Packers, but NFL records and NFL history and stuff he's going to be able to do before he's done. So their thought is that Rodgers is locked in enough on what's in front of him that the fact of taking Jordan Love and what it means for how much longer he's going to be there shouldn't really affect that immediate business. We'll see, of course, whether they're right.
So, Neek, I mean, this is coming from a person who is just very conflict averse, but my concern would be that if you've got that kind of uncomfortable dynamic amongst the most important people in the locker room, how does that affect everyone else on the team? You're a defensive back on the team. Yeah. You're not dealing with these guys every minute of every day, but if there is that uncomfortable dynamic, does that filter to everybody else in the locker room?
I think it does filter in some respects. I don't know how much it impacts everybody, but I do think that the leader of the team, the quarterback, is in part responsible for setting the like accepted behaviors. And when I played for the Ravens, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis were very much into mentoring people. And that set up a dynamic where we all understood that we owed it to each other to help. So while Aaron Rodgers, it's not his job, and maybe they should hire some other coach to come in or some other former quarterback to come in and be Jordan Love's mentor, it is his job, I think, to manage the perspective of the team and the motions of the team, expectations of the team, which includes treating Jordan Love with respect and helping him out. And if there is some tension, I'm sure everything can be solved with some moonlight and roses. Romantic.
I just ad-libbed moonlight and roses. I do not appreciate your bringing it back in my face. Anyway, Graziano, let me come back to you here because you really kind of set it off a little bit. ESPN.com, for those who didn't see this, they put together a panel of you guys and they asked for bold predictions. And you made one regarding the Packers that was extraordinarily bold. For those who missed it, what was yours?
Might have gotten carried away with the boldness aspect of it. Yeah, my prediction was Jordan Love will win more Super Bowls with the Packers than Aaron Rodgers will end up winning. And that's, remember, this is Aaron Rodgers has one. So unless he wins one of the next, you know, two or three, all Jordan Love has to do is win two to make this prediction come true. And, you know, it's supposed to be bold, right? I didn't want to be like, oh, so-and-so will be the leading rookie running back. You know, let's be bold. So, and I thought, what if the Packers, who draft very well, who over the past couple of decades have done as much winning and as much making the playoffs as any team in the league, what if they were right about this guy? What if the Jordan Love pick actually turns out to have been a really smart pick, the way once upon a time the Aaron Rodgers pick was? So I thought it fit the bold prediction, and I figured it would get people talking. I'm surprised, though, I haven't heard from more people on it. Maybe Packers fans out there agree with me.
How are you, Orlovsky? I got 10 seconds. What's your reaction?
This is my reaction. There's some quarterbacks in the NFC East that would like to have a conversation with you, Graz.
Look, the bottom line of it is they've had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers at quarterback for basically the last 30 years and have won two Super Bowls along the way. Jordan Love's got his work cut out for him, but we'll see. I like the boldness. All right, as we continue on this Moonlight and Roses edition of Get Up, Dak Prescott's deal with the Cowboys remains up in the air. If it gets done, it could have a huge impact on Patrick Mahomes. We'll explain as we continue. But first, Graziano, let's see if you can go head-to-head with Hembo here. A little sneaky Hembo time. Which NFL player is the all-time leader in career salary, meaning on-field earnings? That's the question. The answer's next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip-sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and Graziano, Hembo wants a piece of you. Here we come. Hembo's question this morning, which NFL player is the all-time leader in career salary, meaning on-field earnings? What do you think?
I think, unless I'm remembering wrong, at the time that Eli Manning retired a couple of months ago, there was a note that said it was Eli Manning and the all-time leader in career salary.
You are remembering it right. Eli Manning is correct. He wins it by $3 million, by the way, over his brother, Peyton Manning.
Over his brother,
so they did. The Manning family did awfully well on this. Drew Brees and Tom Brady are next. So, speaking of paying quarterbacks, Stephen Jones of the Dallas Cowboys had this to say when talking about paying his Dak Prescott.
We've tried to pay him, and he has to accept what we want to pay him. But the deal's got to be right for Dak. It's got to be right for us to really divide up the pie in the best way possible to win a Super Bowl. There's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that decreases your chances to win. So just trying to figure out the right fit. No one wants to sign Dak to a longer-term deal more than Jerry and myself.
All right, so let's get into what those analytics actually say. Looking at the last couple of Super Bowls, Jones is obviously right, and it goes back farther than that. Patrick Mahomes accounted for just 3% of the Chiefs' salary cap last year. Jimmy Garoppolo, the other quarterback in last year's Super Bowl, made over $19 million, which is just over 10% of the 49ers' cap. Still only made him the 15th highest-paid quarterback in the league. In 2018, Tom Brady accounted for about 13% of the Patriots' salary cap when they won it all. He was the 12th highest-paid quarterback in the league that year, and he faced off against Jared Goff, who was in the third year of his rookie year, made less than $8 million that year before signing the big extension last September. So these numbers do hold. They are real, and here they come. If you're looking back going to 2012, lots of numbers on the screen, but look at Matt Ryan in the lower left corner. He is the only one on the list to make the Super Bowl while accounting for more than 15% of the team's total salary cap. And, of course, his team did not win. Dak is currently accounting for 14.9% of the Cowboys' total salary cap. That is, if he does indeed sign the franchise tag that he currently has. So I want to bring my football group back into this. It's a number you've probably heard before. No team has won the Super Bowl with their quarterback taking up, or any player taking up, more than 15% of their total salary cap. So, Dan Orlovsky, when you look at those analytics, what do you think?
Well, I mean, got to pay someone, right? Like, when are we going to decide, like, teams don't pay the quarterback? Well, don't pay the receiver. Don't pay the running back. Don't pay the offensive lineman. Like, there's a floor that the NFL has to spend. Greeny, I used this saying, I don't know, a couple months ago, don't pay good players great player money. And that's where teams get in their issues. And it's really with the quarterback spot. Teams decide to pay their stars, their star quarterback. When they decide to pay him, they're okay. That pie is going to be fine because you know you have the best piece available. The problem is when they pay the starting quarterback star quarterback money. That's the issue that we're getting to all that when we're talking about Dak and the Cowboys or whatnot. And so, you know, like, the issue with the Cowboys is they're talking out of both sides of their mouth when it comes to the analytics. Well, you didn't talk about that way with Zeke last year, and you can't sit there and say, we really want to pay Dak, but only the amount of money we want to pay him. So, listen, there's a couple star quarterbacks in the NFL. Pay them, and you'll be thankful that you do. But don't make the mistake of paying your starting quarterback star quarterback money.
Now, Nick, again, I mean, sometimes we can make numbers say whatever we want them to say, but the numbers are what they are. No quarterback has won the Super Bowl taking up that percentage of the salary cap. Does that mean nothing?
It means nothing. The numbers are what they are, but they can be bent. So a percentage of salary cap is not the best measure. You can front load a contract. You can back load a contract. It's better to like look at the average value of a contract, because even Jared Goff's deal, it goes from being 10% of salary cap to 15 later in the deal. So I understand the point that you're making, and it is easier to build a team when you have a cheap quarterback, but it doesn't mean that you can't win with a quarterback. It just means it hasn't happened. There have been plenty of quarterbacks that have made it to the Final Four. A few have made it to the Super Bowl who have accounted for close to 15% of their team's salary cap. So it doesn't mean that it can't be done. It just means you need to do like the Saints and draft well after you pay your quarterback. So it can be done. You just have to do a better job in the front office and stop blaming the players.
Dan Graziano, the numbers just say what they say, and a hard salary cap is a zero-sum game. You have X amount of dollars, so it only makes sense that when you are paying the quarterback, no matter how good he is, you are robbing from Peter to pay Paul. That just does stand to reason, does it not?
No.
In theory, yes. But to Dominique's point, it's not the player's job to help the team manage the salary cap. And, you know, you're talking about since 2012, so you're giving me 8 Super Bowls out of 54. I mean, it's still a small sample size. And I think when you look at this, that if Matt Ryan's team holds a 25-point second-half lead, then this stat doesn't hold up. Does that mean that was wrong of the Falcons to pay Matt Ryan? I just think there's too many fluky things that happen that decide who wins the Super Bowl for you to connect it to this. Plus, think about this, too, when you listen to Stephen Jones. They've offered Dak Prescott a lot of money. I mean, well, from what we understand, they're offering him in excess of $34 million a year with a nine-digit guarantee. So I really think that this is all about the negotiation, all about, you know, the way the Cowboys operate in terms of trying to get players to come to them. And at this point, you know, Dak Prescott has held out. There's no reason for him not, and I don't mean hold out. He's holding out for more money. He's holding out signing the contract. He's not holding out. He has shown up and he has played. But the deadline on this is July 15th. If they don't get the long-term deal done by July 15th, they can't negotiate one until after the season. If we're on July 16th and he still hasn't signed, then it's a different story. But for now, it's just all about negotiating and posturing, and that's what's going on with the Cowboys.
Orlovsky, quickly, I'm not talking about, we're having two separate conversations. Greedy. I'm not talking about whether the player should be helping the team with their salary cap. I'm talking about whether it makes sense to pay the player that much or not. The player should get as much money as he possibly can, just like everybody else. But the question is whether it actually does hamper your ability to win if you do it.
It all depends on the player, Greeny. Like, do you think that the Seattle Seahawks regret paying Russell Wilson? Absolutely not. Or the Saints regret paying Drew Brees? Absolutely not. Because they're great players. Like, me and you love golf, right?
Yeah.
And if you hear all the great players in golf right now talk about it, it's about distance, right? Hit this ball as far as I possibly can, even if it's not perfectly straight, because it gets me closer to my end goal, closer to that pin. I look at it the same way with the Cowboys, or with quarterbacks. Listen, I'm going to pay the superstar because it's going to get me closer to my end goal, which is winning the Super Bowl. All it takes you to do is get into the playoffs, and then there's nothing more dangerous in the playoffs than a hot quarterback. But it goes back to this. If you are going to pay your quarterback, who's just a starter, star quarterback money, that's your problem as an organization. You cannot make that mistake.
Go ahead, Nick, finish
up.
That's
not a mistake necessarily. That's where you and I differ a little bit, because the option there is you pay a good quarterback great players money, great player money. Go ahead and pay a bad quarterback good player money. You'll be much worse off. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. So if you have to overpay in that position, then it's your responsibility to figure out how to make it work in other positions.
No.
If you think that your guy's not a superstar, then you have to pay him, or you can go ahead and start the season with some other guy and end up blowing your whole chance.
All right, I'm going to let you guys yell at each other a little bit later in the show.
That's where the mistakes happen.
I need to move on to something else here, because there's a story out there I think people are confused by that I want to clear up. But this is good, and we'll come back to it, guys. Thank you. But I want to get to the bottom of this, because I'm sure you've seen notes about this if you're paying attention in sports. Attorneys representing superstar Zion Williamson's former marketing representative and her company have asked the Pelican star to admit that his mother and his stepfather demanded and received money and gifts from Duke, from Nike, and from Adidas. The filing is part of a legal battle between Williamson and the president of a sports marketing firm called Prime Sports Marketing. Here's what we can tell you about this deal. Back in June, Zion sued a woman named Gina Ford in an attempt to terminate his marketing deal with her company. She, in turn, countersued Williamson, the creative arts agency, CAA, and two of its employees, claiming that Williamson breached a five-year contract. She's seeking $100 million in damages. I want you to hear the thoughts yesterday from highly questionable and Bomani Jones, who was asked about the allegations against Zion. This is what he said.
I do find it interesting, though, that, yes, generally speaking, we are numb about the idea of college players getting paid. However, are you telling me that if this were John Calipari involved in this same situation, that we would be here talking about just across the board, oh, man, this doesn't really matter? No, it wouldn't be all these guys get paid. It would be we knew John Calipari paid players. That's the way we do it. I do find it interesting that once it gets to Duke, right, when Duke decided they wanted to do one-and-done players, it was a change in the times. And it wasn't about distorting what basketball was. This is just what it is now. And so if people were to find out this happened with Duke, they would just say, oh, well, I guess this is what it is now.
I was watching that, and I thought it was fascinating. And obviously, once you when you involve Duke in this kind of a conversation, it's going to raise the level of the conversation. So we called up our legal analyst, Ryan Smith, and delighted that he could get up with us early here, Ryan. So I've read everything I can get my hands on about this and still find it confusing. What can you tell the audience about the circumstances of these lawsuits and what they mean?
Well, Greeny, I think what they're trying to do here on the other side of Zion is back him into a legal corner. I'm not sure it's going to work, though. This is essentially a request for admissions. It's like as if the parties come together in discovery and one side says, look, we just want to get to the truth of some things to try to streamline this if it becomes a trial. So admit to these things and we'll move forward. But what they're trying to do here is essentially say, we believe Zion took an improper benefit. And let's say he did for the sake of argument. There's no proof out there of that. If he did, he would do this under oath. He would answer these questions under oath. If he took that benefit and said yes, they have a good case in their lawsuit. If he took that benefit and said no, then he's essentially lying under oath and he could be subject to perjury charges. So that's essentially what this is. They're trying to get him to admit something to either help their lawsuit or catch him in a lie if he admits to something that he actually took.
So I guess what most sports fans, I think, would be want me to ask you now is, what are the circumstances under which Zion Williamson winds up in a court of law having to testify under oath as to whether or not he took money to go to Duke?
I think we're a long way away from that, and here's why. First of all, if I'm Zion's team, I could have the ability to ask for delays in answering these questions and in responding to this. But not only that, if I do end up eventually fighting this, I'm fighting this and trying to get somebody to toss this out, this whole request. And my argument is essentially this. Hey, how is this relevant to what's happening here? You're saying Zion breached a contract. I'm saying he didn't, his legal team. So taking the improper benefits is not really about getting to the truth of something. You're really trying to create scandal, trying to embarrass my client. And really, that's not what this is supposed to be all about. And that could get this tossed out. And if that happens, Greeny, if this gets tossed out and he doesn't have to answer these questions under oath, he may never have to answer questions like these.
Yeah, I'm so glad you just said that, because that was the question I kept asking myself as I was reading through this. And I'm glad that I'm not the only one. What in the world does whether or not I understand people's interest in it? But what does whether or not he took money from Duke or Nike or Adidas have to do with whether he was right or wrong in severing his relationship with this other marketing firm?
Yeah, I think what they're trying to say here, what the opposing side is trying to say here is essentially this. Zion has said to them in part of his reply to this, hey, this was never really a contract because you never told me by signing this marketing deal, I could forfeit my eligibility. What they're trying to say essentially is, hey, you forfeited your eligibility even before this by taking this kind of benefit. But you know what I think this really is, Greeny? I think this is this other side trying to push for a settlement. If they can embarrass him, if they can keep this out there in the news, if they can actually force him to answer these questions, maybe before that, they come to some sort of settlement and end up getting a big payoff. So we'll have to see how this plays out, but I would not be surprised if this eventually settled.
Okay, so the chances then that Zion winds up having to answer these questions under oath seems unlikely, which is what I expected you to say when we first brought you in. Ryan, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you jumping in here on short notice to answer these questions. Thank you, my man.
Sure thing.
All right, that's Ryan Smith with us with the very latest on the situation with Zion. Meanwhile, coming up, this is the second of three UFC events in Jacksonville this week. It's UFC Fight Night. It's tomorrow night. It's Anthony Smith and Glover Teixeira in the main event. It's on ESPN Plus at 9 Eastern. You can order the main card in English and Spanish by going to ESPNplus.com. And be sure to download the ESPN app if you're watching on your mobile device. Coming up, Florida football coach Dan Mullen speaks bluntly about his sport in the midst of a pandemic. You'll hear it next. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and the discussion continues across the country about the best ways to conduct the 2020 college football season. And yesterday, Florida's head coach Dan Mullen was on with our Laura Rutledge. He said he can't see waiting for all the schools to start at the same time. Here's a piece of that.
I think what we have to do is we can't sit here and get caught in the, until every single school in the country is ready to get back and play football, no schools can start. I think that is a very naive and way of thinking. I don't think it's a very healthy way of thinking. I don't think it's good for the sport or the game of football or for the individuals that are playing.
That interview there, Laura is with us, as well as Paul Feinbaum. Good morning, guys. And Laura, I'll start with you. What else stood out from that interview you had with Coach Mullen?
Yeah, Greeny, there was so much, but I think one of the things that's really interesting is that the University of Florida right now, from a football standpoint, seems to be taking their key from the state itself for how they're going to manage all of this. And in fact, Dan Mullen mentioned a couple of weeks' time when he thinks that they may even be able to open up their weight room. A lot of that has to do with the fact that in the state of Florida, they may be opening gyms in a couple of weeks. And so a weight room at a university would be considered like a gym. And the way that he phrased it is that they feel like their guys are going to be going out and working out anyway in some of these gyms. They would rather have them on campus at their gym, their workout facility, where they can monitor things and try to practice as much safety as possible, keeping things clean, keeping people social distanced, only allowing 10 people in a weight room at one time. And this is just all going to be very fluid, but when he said a couple of weeks, that really caught my attention. That's a lot sooner than some other places are talking about. And I think that's a big part of this. Another thing that stuck out to me is he said what they have dealt with, they've actually sent some tests out and been able to test some of their players who thought they might have been exposed to COVID and have not had any positive tests come back. But they have been able to secure some tests. And I do think that that's happening around the country as well. Some of that, he said, too, is just dealing with the mental health of their players and coaches throughout this time, trying to keep them as positive as possible.
So, Paul, we keep hearing from different coaches and different administrators with a variety of different thoughts. What would you say is your one biggest takeaway from all of this?
This is going to be survival of the fittest. This is a brutal game, Greeny, and if you can play, you play. If you don't, you get run over and left behind. It does set up for a roller coaster ride of a college football season. And there are many skeptics that wonder exactly what it's going to look like at the end, but coaches like Dan Mullen and almost every coach and athletic director and commissioner that we have spoken to has the same feeling. We are going to play, and the real reason they're going to play is not because they enjoy college football, because they can't afford not to. The universities could start bleeding, and these athletic departments will be underwater without college football.
Danny, I feel like I haven't had a chance to ask you about this piece of it. You've heard all of this discussion, obviously, that we've been having in other places. What are your thoughts on some schools playing and others not?
I'm okay with it. You know, like I've said this, Greeny, this is not a greed thing. This is a necessity thing. And there's a lot of these schools that provide a massive amount of income to not only their institutions, football-wise, but all their sports programming-wise. And I think the reality is, from everything we know about what's happening, some spots of our country have not been as affected by what's going on as others when it comes to numbers. And so if a school or a conference says, overall, we haven't been as impacted negatively as certain areas, and we feel that we've got the parameters in place to allow us to do this, then I don't know if there's anything that can stand in their way, because the alternative is a massive amount of revenue lost that is going to hinder, again, tens of thousands of families being able to go to college on scholarship without it.
And so, Laura, again, we talk to the coaches and we talk to the administrators. We hear from the conference commissioners. Ultimately, who's going to make these choices? I mean, it sounds like Dan Mullen is telling you, yeah, I'm bringing my players back in 2 weeks. Is there anyone in charge in a bigger sense here?
Right. It seems like there's not. And that's why I think Paul's point is really important here, where everybody's just sort of making their own decision for their each individual school. I mean, Dan Mullen said, look, if we can bring our players back and we can play football, we're going to alter the schedule to find other teams that can also play. One thing that's interesting, too, the University of Florida has said that they will make a decision about the fall semester sometime in July. So we're talking about the potential of them trying to play football without students on campus, at least in the traditional matter, which Mark Emmert has already said from the NCAA standpoint may not be what he wants to see. So I don't know who's in charge here.
Paul, quickly, how give me a final thought here. I mean, the commissioners ultimately will have to have some say in this. Dan Mullen can't make up his own schedule. So who ultimately steps in and says, all right, here's what we're going to do?
It's going to come down to the five Power Five commissioners, Greeny. Those are the men who will sit at the table and decide. And one thing very interesting about it, there's already scrambling going on. Alabama plays Southern Cal in the first game of the season at Jerry's World. There's already talk going on between Alabama and TCU about meeting instead of the other two, because TCU plays at Berkeley, and the California schools, they do not believe, will be available for that date.
All right, so the changes might be starting as quickly as possible. Guys, thank you. We'll bring you back a little bit later in the program, because there's just so much here. It is the story that continues to develop. And we got a very busy day coming your way across ESPN. After we wrap up, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter. Then NFL Live, The Jump, First Take Extra. Jalen and Jacoby, Highly Questionable, Around the Horn, followed by a two-hour SportsCenter at 5 o'clock with the PTI guys at 5:30, and cap your day with SportsCenter and Scott Van Pelt. We will be busy all day long here on ESPN. Coming up, Shaquille O'Neal said this weekend, an NBA champion this year would come with an asterisk because of the shutdown. I have a different view. You'll hear it as we continue. Let's get up on ESPN.